Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1 with Allcare Pharmacy. Get expert advice from your friendly healthcare team at Allcare Pharmacy, Ireland's largest community pharmacy network.
Okay, we'll move on. We'll get frantic again. Excuse me. The latest Joker film, Joker Folie à Deux, starring Joaquin Phoenix and Lady Gaga, is out in a few weeks. And now we've got an 11-minute standing ovation at the Venice Film Festival, but I gather everything does these days. The reviews, on the other hand, a bit more mixed, but there is still this fascination with the Joker character in his various iterations. So I'm joined now by Harvey O'Brien, head of film at the UCD School of English Drama and Film. Welcome, Harvey.
Hi, Brendan. Thank you.
So, Harvey, you're going to unpick the Freudian subtext of the Joker first. So, if we go back to the original Batman comics, what ideas and inspirations are in the OG Joker? Like, what did he represent or personify?
He first appeared in literally Batman number one, which was in the spring of 1940. Batman had been around for a year at that stage, and initially he was just introduced as a madman killer, a homicidal killer, and he was styled after a clown. Now, the whole origins of the character are still in a certain amount of dispute, because there were three people involved: Bob Kane, Bill Finger, and Jerry Robinson. And some people credit Jerry Robinson with it, some people credit the other two. The point is that the visual inspiration came from a clown, and the kind of style and styling of that clown came from a pack of cards, the image of the Joker on a pack of cards. And of course, the Joker is literally wild. It is a card that can be many things. It disrupts the order of the deck. And this is what the Joker signifies and signified at that time. The other major source of visual inspiration came from a 1928 German film called The Man Who Laughs, based on the novel by Victor Hugo. And this starred Conrad Veidt as a man who was disfigured as a child by a king, and his face turned into this rictus grin that he could never lose, no matter what he felt. So these became the iconic images that would inform what the Joker was. The Joker was also, again, clownish, so he was colorful. And of course, Batman is dark. And in a world where you have a vigilante hero cloaked in darkness and the image of a bat, something that's almost his opposite, this bright, crazed, over-the-top character, became his arch nemesis. Didn't necessarily happen overnight, but it became that, like, yeah, let's keep going back to that guy Joker, because he's a bit mad and Batman is so serious. And the combination of the two worked over time.
And in general, what are we drawn to here? Is that our own kind of dark side?
I think, well, the Joker represents chaos. I mean, he represents, like, if Batman represents law and order in that he's trying to maintain order in a world gone mad, the Joker is like, why are we trying to maintain order? There's an inherent surreal quality to the Joker, that the original surrealists were out to sort of look at the world through an absurd lens and say, you know what, it's a bit crazy that we try to organize ourselves, that we try to have government and religion, when really we don't even know what's going on inside our own heads. They were informed by the development of psychoanalysis. So often what the Joker does is just show us that, you know, underneath the thin kind of line of civilization, yes, we're all absolutely crazy. And he revels in it, and he makes everything funny. Remember, surrealism is also making things funny so that you understand the absurdity. So that's what the Joker taps into, our desire to say, ah, for God's sake, why so serious? You know, let's have a bit of a laugh here. And then, of course, he kills you, which is a slight problem.
So then, like, he's evolved. There's been different iterations down the years. People will remember as kids that 60s TV show, he was kind of a camp figure. Tim Burton then, Jack Nicholson as his Joker, feels like the start of the modern Joker on screen.
Yeah, well, the Joker, the Cesar Romero Joker, came from that era of the camp Batman TV series. And I actually really enjoy Cesar Romero's performance. And it's a lot of fun. And it echoes where the comic books were. But in the early 1970s, comic books in general underwent a kind of revision where they started to begin to become more socially relevant and say, you know what, the comic book world can speak to us about the contemporary world. So you had a very famous DC series of Green Lantern and Green Arrow going out to discover America. taking the line that it's the famous line in Green Arrow, you know, no evil shall escape my sight. And the question was asked, well, hang on, where do you stand on the side of social injustice, you know, where the government is in the right, but it isn't right? How do you do that? So that world of the 70s began to filter on through it. In the 1980s, you saw a couple of really important Joker stories and Batman stories, The Dark Knight Returns from 1986, The Killing Joke from 88, and Death in the Family from 88. And the Joker was central in The Killing Joke and in Death in the Family as a much more terrifying figure, much darker, while also maintaining the same kind of crazed energy. So Tim Burton's Batman followed on in that mold. And Jack Nicholson, again, I think his performance has kind of been forgotten in the wake of what's happened. It's a really interesting performance. It has both the crazed humor and fun of the Cesar Romero and something much, much darker in an undertone that Nicholson, of course, is the perfect actor to capture. He played the Joker. He was slumming it, you know. I mean, I don't really think so. No, I think he really found
Jack
something
Nicholson
in it.
Jack Nicholson menace there, yeah. So the Joaquin Phoenix then, again, this is a very, very different kind of Joker, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, is he the Joker at all is an interesting question.
Yeah.
The Joker as a character in the comic books is usually defined as being hyper-intelligent, usually good at chemistry, you know, that there's a sort of genius-level IQ that's become deranged. The character as played in the two, I haven't seen the second one yet, Joker films, he's just an ordinary guy and he's got problems. He's got emotional difficulties and a sort of a psychosomatic illness that means he can't stop laughing. And he comes across as a sort of sad attention seeker. I mean, this is what Todd Phillips has done with the character. And I found it very interesting. I mean, those who've seen the first film, if you've ever seen Martin Scorsese's film, The King of Comedy, where you have Robert De Niro playing a character called Rupert Pupkin, who's delusional and wants to be a comedian. I mean, it's almost the same drama. And the fact that De Niro is in Joker is a signal to us that this is as much a film just about a sad outsider as it is about a supervillain. So I think it's a different take on the character.
Yeah, and then it's interesting. You're basically saying that the politics of every time the Joker can be a vessel for kind of that. And then, like, it was interesting that Arthur in Joker became this kind of incel icon, I guess, and, you know, all these, the manosphere adopting him as a kind of a misunderstood hero in a way.
Yeah. And that's, again, all to do with us and what it is that we seek out in these films. To me, that Joker film isn't celebrating being an incel and celebrating being misunderstood. To me, it's a tragic film. I stand back from it and I see what the film is saying about how disconnected that character is and disaffected. And there's no triumph in it. I mean, he has a very brief moment of fame and he winds up in an asylum. And the end of the film is he's trapped inside an asylum where a riot is going on. That doesn't feel like superhero. That doesn't feel like celebrating that world. The Joker always, you know, does bring in that paradox of what is it you want from your society? Because if Batman represents law and order, he's a vigilante. He's also psychologically disturbed. Again, if we go back to the 1989 film, there's that great line where Jack Nicholson's Joker says, "What kind of a world do we live in where a man dressed up as a bat gets all of my press?" You know, there's this kind of sense of a celebrity, artistic expression. And each filmmaker brings who they are to the telling of the story of Joker. And I think that basically what you're looking at there is a Todd Phillips drama. I haven't seen the second one. I know he's going for this kind of musical fantasia thing. I'm curious to see where he goes. But to me, it's a filmmaker and it's not necessarily, he's not like making films for incels. He's making a film about that world and what's going on with a character who exists in that world, which is, of course, a world without a Batman. So in a world without Batman, what is Joker? He's something else. He's this sort of character who exists in a space that is defined by that filmmaker.
Okay, Harvey O'Brien, head of film at the UCD School of English Drama and Film. Thank you very much. We'll take a break.